Welcome to the nationally syndicated In the Oil Patch radio show with Kim Bilotto, broadcasting from the Port of Corpus Christi studios. Get more on the Port of Corpus Christi at portofcc.com. In the Oil Patch radio show will give you an inside look at the oil, gas, and energy industry and how it affects you from industry experts and government officials right here on the In the Oil Patch radio show.
Now it's time for me to welcome on my guest, Katie Zimmerman. You are a prominent energy leader, an expert, and experienced in engineering and technical solutions in the energy transition. You were recently named industry's top 50 women in hydrogen by The Economist and A Woman Who Means Business by the Houston Business Journal. You are an expert in hydrogen as well as carbon capture. So welcome to In the Oil Patch radio show.
Thanks for having me, Kim.
So let's begin with the company that you work for currently is Wood. Tell us a little bit about the company, its origins, what you specifically do, and your background with the Wood Group.
Thanks. So Wood is essentially a company that provides engineering and consulting across the energy and materials markets. We have about 36,000 people globally, and 7,000 of those people are in the United States. And we do everything from offshore, onshore. So we also have done renewables projects, and now we're doing lots of projects that get classed as decarbonization. So as part of our strategy for growth, we've set out that we're going to work across consulting, projects, and operations, which are three business units. And the cross-cutters that underscore all of them are decarbonization and digitalization.
So have you had an opportunity to come to some of the sessions here at CERAWeek? What are your thoughts on some of the new technology, some of the large majors and what areas they are moving towards? What is your assessment of what the feeling is here at CERAWeek for 2024?
I think this year we're moving towards a much more pragmatic tone than we were in previous years. I have always had my clients tell me we are not a charity. And it's more talking about how do you scale and commercialize the technologies. And we're talking as an industry more openly about it's not just going to be one technology. And it's more the feeling that a rising tide lifts all boats. So you're not going to have just carbon capture, just hydrogen, just renewables. You're probably going to have a little bit of everything, much like we do in Texas with our energy mix.
Right.
You're going to have the traditional sources, but then you're also going to have how do we do it better, smarter, faster. Because the industry's goal is still to provide clean, affordable, reliable energy for all.
And affordable as well.
Yes, affordable.
So let's talk about the Wood Group, because you all have an extensive experience in the energy sector. So how do you envision the future of oil and gas in context to the energy transition? What are you telling your customer base? And how do you see your customer base reacting to your insightful discussions, you're trying to move them along in the climate change debate?
So for me, I think what really helps is I am probably a more traditional Wood employee. I started with the company as an intern doing offshore engineering for the Gulf of Mexico, offshore West Africa. And then from that, I moved into shale. We did shale before it was cool. And I did lots of really exciting projects as part of shale, and I learned a lot. And that was my first exposure to amine systems and a lot of pipelines, electrification. How do you optimize processes to mitigate flaring? And so from that, I went into brownfield modifications that covered onshore and offshore. And now I do a role where it's decarbonization, and we're looking at all those things that I've used to do that the company has done for decades, but you're just looking at them in a different light. So instead of talking about how much more oil and gas you bring out of the ground, you're looking at, well, what are the emissions reductions associated with that? And how do I do my job better? And then we're also thinking about some things like hydrogen. Hydrogen's not new to oil and gas. We've been using it for decades in downstream. It's like for Wood, we've had our own steam methane reforming technology since the 60s. So we're really comfortable with it. We've done hydrogen pipelines on the Gulf Coast before. So it's not new. It's not scary. It's just another tool that you can use. Similarly for CO2, we've been doing enhanced oil recovery for some of our clients in West Texas for over 20 years. So CO2, moving it around, is something Texans in particular are very comfortable with. And now as the world's trying to figure out, how do I decarbonize? These are things that come up front and center. And there's also innovation that's coming out of it. Like, what are new creative things that we can do? Like, we have a technology that it used to be used more in coal applications, but now you can use it to make hydrogen and carbon dioxide into new fuels. So there's a lot for us as the industry that's exciting about decarbonization and energy transition, especially in a place like Texan, where we like to be bigger and better.
Exactly. Let's talk about maintenance asset integrity and safety, because you mentioned that you all have been doing hydrogen for a very long time. A lot of people, I think, question the safety of it, but yet you've been doing it for so long, we don't really hear any problems with it. So talk about the integrity from the Wood Group of these assets and the safety of your operation.
Right. And it's a lot like oil and gas, where safety has to be paramount.
Yep.
And especially for hydrogen and CO2, where the community doesn't necessarily see why it's going through their backyard or what the direct impact is on jobs, making sure that everyone understands, here are the different safety risks. Like CO2 is an easy one to pick on too, because if you do have a release of CO2, it doesn't respond the same way as a lot of hydrocarbons would. So you have to have different safety analysis that you do. The permitting is different. There's a lot that goes into that. But we have a lot of flow assurance engineers, and flow assurance is something we don't necessarily think about all the time, but they look at what is happening inside the pipe. So they're the people that when you do a hydrogen project, they're making sure that that pipe is built to the right specification to where it's going to maintain its integrity. And they can do things like model what's the flow in a particular part of the line. And then they can check that against actual data to ensure that there's not a leak. So there's a lot of really cool, innovative stuff that we can do as an industry by just applying what we already know and we already do in other parts, like offshore pipelines. We use a lot of the same technologies to check and make sure that there aren't leaks that we would for hydrogen pipeline systems. But then there are other things, like for us, hydrogen fuel switching is why hydrogen is becoming such a big part of the conversation, because they want to replace natural gas, in particular refinery fuel gas, with hydrogen, or at least blend it to a really high amount. But if you do actually replace hydrogen, or replace natural gas with hydrogen, it acts differently, and you can't see a flame, for example. So everything that you have around your automation where you're looking for a flame, you have to redesign. So it's also having those people who have been dealing with hydrogen for a really long time, making sure that they're in the room, they're part of the conversations. And for us, that's meant on a lot of our hydrogen projects that show up in midstream. We have a lot of our downstream people who've been doing hydrogen compression, hydrogen blending, all of that for decades, come in and work with our midstream team so that when they're doing all of these things, they know what's going on. And we do extra checks and extra cold ice reviews to make sure that everything is run appropriately. And another thing that we're doing with our operators is we're talking about, okay, like for CO2, how do you make sure that operators are trained for CCS? So we're working internally and making our own training regime that we can have clients take, but then we can also give it to our own operators so that everyone is aware, just like when you start up any new facility that's a little off the beaten path.
So you mentioned a lot of what Wood Group is already doing, but let's talk about, is there anything else in the way of asset integrity and safety of the operations outside of hydrogen that you guys are also specializing or working
on? Oh, yeah.
So you're like, oh, we've got tons of that.
We have tons of that. Yeah. So we've been doing a lot, especially if you look at like offshore pipelines, and if you look at onshore pipelines, LNG facilities. We have a program, Virtuoso, that it does a lot of asset integrity monitoring, or Nexus.
Is that using artificial, are y'all involved in artificial intelligence as well? And of course, optimizing asset maintenance and operation too. That might've been two separate questions.
So they all go together, right? And so we do a lot around production optimization. That's something like the rest of the industry we've been doing for decades.
It's kind of important right now.
It is.
Efficiency.
It really is. And that's a big part of how you get emissions down. right? Is you're going to look at how do I do everything smarter, better, faster. At Wood, when we look at
cleaner and cheaper.
Exactly. So when we look at decarbonization at Wood, as part of my role, we use the SCORE analogy. We joke, we're engineers. Of course, it's an acronym. So S is substitute. That's where you look at, can you substitute a fuel gas? Can you substitute feedstock? What can you do to change something about the operation? C is for carbon capture, but O and R are optimize and reduce. So optimize and reduce is where we like as that. An industry have always been. And that's looking at how do I get more for less emissions? And that's flare reduction. How do I keep my compressors online? All those little things we've always done. And then E is evaluate it, because like I've said, our clients very openly say we are not a charity and we don't expect them to be. So making sure that they can make those changes without spending all of their money, without moving the needle. So when we make a plan for what's that decarbonization roadmap, it's going to achieve results with an understanding that there's an economic impact. Because like you said, it has to be affordable. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's not going to be sustainable.
To work. Right. Let's talk about numbers. With the Wood Group implemented a new strategy in November 2022. It was a three-year growth. Where are you now? Can you go over that with us and where you've still got two more years? Are you hitting those numbers? Are you happy? Is the Wood Group happy where they are?
Well, so for us, what we're really trying to do is high grade the portfolio. You want decarbonization to be evident and obvious in the business. We know it's there. We know it exists. But then how do you get that to show in which projects you have and which projects you can talk about with your clients, with the market, with everyone? And what I've noticed is a lot of the projects that we're having that are actually moving forward are with a lot of our traditional clients. So for us, it's you're doing the normal projects, but in a better way to where there's some element of either hydrogen fuel switching or there's carbon capture, there's electrification. So as an industry, we are doing our projects with sustainability and decarbonization in mind. And the strategy is making sure that decarbonization is something that all of our business is built on, that and digitalization.
That is the name of the game right now. That's really important.
Katie, we have to take a quick break. You're listening to In Your Patch Radio Show, and we'll be right back.
Attention small and medium-sized business owners. Are you feeling overwhelmed with back-office tasks like payroll, workers' compensation, federal regulations, safety laws, employment standards, and benefits? Don't worry. Unique HR has your back. For over 30 years, our team of qualified professionals has been providing people-centered solutions to help businesses like yours navigate the heavy burden of running a business and managing their workforce. We're the PEO with a pulse, and we are just a phone call away. Call us today at 361-852-6392. Unique HR, the partner you can trust.
And now it's time for me to welcome on my guest, George Tybosch, who is the Chief Executive Officer for MIQ Methane Intelligence. George, welcome back to In Your Oil Patch Radio Show.
Great to be back on the show here.
So you were here last year. You visited with us. Your company was a little bit younger and you were trying to get your accomplishment or, you know, get your mission accomplished here.
Yep.
So I want to note the differences of what you feel quickly between last year and this year. What are you feeling here at CERAWeek?
The vibe is a good vibe. Last year was actually the first time I was at CERAWeek. And I thought, for me, it's one of the best oil and gas conferences there is globally, I think.
Absolutely.
So I really was keen on coming back here. And indeed, the company was a bit younger, so was I. And we've both grown a bit older.
Sweet dollar.
But the companies or MIQ has indeed grown, or rather the certification of producers has grown quite massively. We are now certifying already 20% of U.S. gas production, which is obviously, as most people here will know, an enormous amount of gas. To put it in context, and I say this a lot to the Europeans, that 20% of U.S. gas represents around half of European consumption. And so it's an enormous amount of gas that's been certified. All of that gas has in our system A, B, or C grades, which means that the methane emissions are less than 0.2% certified, audited. And I think that's, in a way, only the start. We think this will go much further, will go global, and all of that with the purpose of abating methane across the supply chain.
Well, the one thing I have picked up here at this conference is last year, it was the starting of a lot of discussion on how this is going to evolve in greener technologies due to climate change and other net zero path. However, this year, it seems to be the dominant force in many ways, including what the Department of Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm told us in her keynote speaker. Now, I want to back up because I didn't get to introduce you properly because I wanted to welcome you back and we got off on an immediate topic. But you joined MIQ in 2019 as a senior advisor. Later, you went on to the CEO 2022. Tell me a little bit about your background in this area of being able to capture the CEO position.
Okay, well, that's in a way an interesting question because my background helps me to kind of shape MIQ to what it should be doing to deal with climate change. So my background, I started working in oil for BP, the company, as a graduate, as one does, out of engineering university. And I stayed there for about 10 years. And within BP, there's a big trading floor department. I ended up on the trading floor, fell in love with the vibe on the trading floors, the challenges. And then I stayed in that world, basically, what here one would call Wall Street. In the UK, we call that the city. Then went on to work in similar capacities for Goldman and JP Morgan. So all around oil, gas, derivatives, trading in oil and gas. So understanding how the flows of oil and gas work in the real world, where the decisions are being made on a daily basis. And that is very relevant for what we're doing with MIQ, because what we're trying to do is giving that information to the traders, to the decision makers, to the commercial people, so that ultimately they can decide at the touch of a fingertip. They have the information there. Do I want the lower methane cargo or the medium methane cargo, or the maybe I don't want to buy the high methane cargo? But to enable that, they need to have that information there and then, rather than, oh, let me look up that yearly ESG report that was published by the company. You can't make decisions on that. So what we are trying to do is bring that information via certification into the real world. And then I know that real world will make the right decisions and drive down.
Yeah, because once the ship has left the port, it's a little late. The crude traders who are buying the crude or natural gas, they need to know the advantages and disadvantages.
Basically.
On both ends.
Yeah.
What does MIQ stand for?
Oh, okay. So methane IQ, intelligence quotes. Yeah, but we just say IQ.
Okay.
Methane IQ, because we bring the intelligence in if you want to, the data from the operators to the buyers or the traders.
So you said that from last year, CERAWeek, to this year, you've grown about 20% of the market in being able to set some standards and method.
Yes.
So tell me a little bit about how this works, the certification, supply chain. Give us an overall big picture.
Yeah, so the way it works is like MIQ in a way is an ecosystem. What we do, we create the framework, because methane is quite complex to determine the methane emissions. It happens, as a lot of people here will know, at the wells, but you can't smell it. You can't see it. And unless there's a huge health and safety danger, then it gets dealt with. But it can be hundreds of small leaks. And so it's not that obvious. So we've created a framework to determine the methane emissions. And that framework involves the need for methane measurement technology needs to be involved. And that can be drones, that can be flyovers, that can be handheld cameras. That's all embedded in the protocol. And then an auditor comes in as well. And the auditor will use that protocol to check the specific producing facility and assess them on the methane emissions. Ultimately, after that process takes about 1 to 2, 3 months, then the producing facility will get a grade, an A, B, C grade, for example. And in a way, there's loads of similarities with what's happening in the financial world, where if a company does the audit of its accounts, one uses a standard in the US called US GAAP, an auditor comes in, assesses the company, and then gets published the audited accounts. And there are lots of similarities with some of these concepts, because purely from a principal perspective, we decided not to invent a new wheel here, but using best practices used in other sectors. So then when that facility is certified, and let's say they get a B grade, for example, from there on, they can now sell their gas with their certificates attached. And so if you have a buyer of that gas, the seller can now transmit the gas saying, okay, my gas was certified by MIQ. And it's key that it's not the operator themselves making this statement. Why would you believe that?
Yes, how can I trust
that? How can I trust that? It doesn't.
Third-party verification is great.
Exactly. So it has to be a third-party verification. And then the buyer knows, okay, I have bought B-rated gas, and that's 0.1% leaks, and that is way lower than the average leak. So I've bought lower methane gas. And where this is leading is then the buyers can make that choice for that lower methane gas, and that's already taking place. And we're seeing that in the LNG world as well, that the buyers from Europe and Japan are now asking for that. What that will lead to is that the operators are now getting pricing signals, they're getting clear signals like, okay, yeah, let me start to work towards abating my methane.
You know, it's a good thing in the way of, you know, looking at your information, that obviously methane emissions is a huge problem for climate change. Your stats reflect that it's 80 times greater than CO2. We need to start reducing this.
Yep.
George, we have to take a quick break. You're listening to In the Oil Patch Radio Show. We'll be right back.
And now it's a pleasure to welcome on Damian Beauchamp, who is the President and Chief Development Officer of Eight Rivers. Welcome to In the Oil Patch Radio Show, Damian.
Yes, thank you for having me.
So let me give our listeners a little bit of your background. You have a wealth of experience in CCUS, which is carbon capture, utilization, and storage, related to projects and technology that's in development. And you have been very instrumental in driving revenue growth, project development, and strategies and partnerships since you joined the firm in 2016. Your leadership extends to co-founder and president of Coyote Clean Power, LLC. Your contributions in the field are well recognized, including co-authorship of the U.S. National Petroleum Council Comprehensive CCUS Report, which underscores the commitment in advancing suitable energy solutions. Tell us a little bit about Eight Rivers. What is it specifically, and how are you pushing it out, utilizing it, getting the word out here in the conference at CERAWeek? Is everybody familiar with what you're doing in your company and your organization?
Yeah, so Eight Rivers was really founded with the intent to solve large industrial scale problems. And the most significant one we centered in on was around CO2 emissions and climate change. And what we saw was that everybody was trying to deploy a windmill or a solar panel. But unfortunately, when you deploy those assets, you're not actually removing CO2 from the equation. So the assets that are emitting are still emitting. And so we design systems that inherently capture CO2, but utilize hydrocarbons on the front end. And we design new build systems to do things like power production or hydrogen or materials. And when we design those systems, they're new build. They're not retrofit. And the other component of our systems is we focus on oxycombustion, so burning with pure oxygen, not the air, and then inherently capturing all the CO2 as a gas and not using any adsorbent. So we're almost like a new wave kind of refiner, where we're converting the hydrocarbons into value-added commodities and not having any of the emissions.
And
I would say, you know, here at CERAWeek, 10 years ago, we were kind of running around trying to create business, and things have certainly shifted over the past 10 years with our persistence in actually delivering what we said we were going to do. A lot of companies now are reaching out to us. I still don't think we're as well known as say an ExxonMobil or Occidental Petroleum, but we think that our awareness of Eight Rivers is certainly growing. It's been the busiest and most productive CERAWeek since we've been coming for the past 5 years, and we've been a sponsor for 3.
Yeah, well, Damian, you're definitely hitting on this. CERAWeek is something that I've not seen either, and I've been coming here for years covering it. It's definitely covering transition, carbon capture, hydrogen, and it's moving into really highlighting that the energy sector as a whole is trying to find solutions, and they really truly are serious about it. But for the listeners who are not really familiar with what are the big issues, because, you know, when we talk about energy, it is such a complicated topic for the average person to understand. As a reporter, talk show host, it's hard to understand all the components. There's so many moving parts. There's so many technical things that the industry deals with. And then there are also a race to find the solutions that we need because of climate change. So let's go back and try to reenact, if you will, or take apart, if you will, CCUS, which is carbon capture, utilization, storage. You're immediately trying to lower emissions in the oil and gas sector. Can you take us through what was the original problem, if you will, simplified? What was the oil and gas doing that was creating problems for climate change? And how are you seeing now with carbon capture utilization storage coming in and kind of saving the day and lowering or helping in the name of climate change?
So to start that, you really need to first understand that a lot of work's been done on assessing different gases that go up into the atmosphere, be it methane, CO2, water vapor, nitrogen, all these things. And people have looked at these gases, and it turns out that CO2 acts like a blanket for heat in the atmosphere. Once the heat comes in, it's harder to get out the more CO2 you have. And so that was
And this
the
ultimately is climate change. That's what
global warming.
global warming,
Right,
sorry,
right.
that's leading to climate change.
So as the temperature rises, dynamics in weather begin to shift. And where that CO2 comes from, right, is from the combustion of any fossil fuel, be it oil, gas, coal, petcoke, biomass, doesn't matter. If it's a carbonaceous fuel source, when you burn it, you're going to get CO2 and you're going to get water. The problem we saw is the way people were burning these hydrocarbons. So what I like to say sometimes is that a particular resource isn't inherently bad or good. How that resource is managed makes all the difference. So
I agree with you.
let me give you an example. If you gave your money to Warren Buffett 20 years ago, you'd be better off today than if you gave it to Bernie Madoff.
Yes.
And so we look at ourselves as the Warren Buffetts of CO2, if you will. We look to manage that resource in a way that creates value. And the way we're doing that is we looked at how you burn a hydrocarbon. So instead of burning hydrocarbon in oxygen from the air, we're using pure oxygen. So we have no nitrogen associated with that. So we get a pure stream of CO2 instead of a dilute stream of CO2. But that's been the biggest problem, is that when the hydrocarbon is burned, it creates CO2, but CO2 is a very small component of the total emissions. A lot of it is nitrogen, and it's very hard to separate that CO2. And so we're creating concentrated forms of CO2 that can easily be taken for sequestration or enhanced oil recovery.
Damien, we have to take a quick break. You are listening to In the Oil Patch Radio Show. We'll be right back. So let's begin. My guest today is John Norman, who is the president of HydroStar. John, welcome to In the Oil Patch Radio Show.
Thank you very much for having me.
How are you enjoying CERAWeek? We are on our fourth day. There's been a lot of big players coming and speaking, along with a lot of great elected officials. Our Department of Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm was here yesterday speaking, or Tuesday, I'm forgetting my days, but there's been a lot going on. What is your vibe here for CERAWeek?
It's been a great event. Definitely one of the most well-attended energy events in the world. Helpful to be getting stuff done, as well as having important discussions. In our case, that involves much around the energy transition, particularly in the power sector. I've definitely witnessed a change over time in CERAWeek, and its focus being really broad on what we need to meet our energy needs well into the future, whether that's from its oil and gas basis through to energy transition today. And the focus on energy transition, and in our case, energy storage and long duration energy storage on the electrical grid, has been really, really good.
So, and we're going to get into that in the show. Tell me a little bit about your background. You are the president of HydroStar. Then we'll learn a little bit about HydroStar and how you're involved here at CERAWeek. What's your background?
So I'm a recovering engineer.
I like how you say that. Engineer, logical. So does that mean that you're not so logical? Recovering? What does that mean?
Then I became an economist, so I don't know what that makes me.
That's super smart.
Maybe hyper-rational. I don't know. But that's my background. And actually, I started off my career in engineering consulting, but really moved into the policy world. So this was up in Canada, and I led the coal replacement program with the Ontario government back in the mid to late 2000s.
Okay.
And that was really my first significant foray, say, into the power sector. But ever since then, I've been working very actively, primarily in the renewable energy and storage space. So I joined HydroStar about 7 years ago. And prior to that, I was at Brookfield Renewable. I led our commercial development in North America, as well as our revenue and government regulatory affairs across Europe and North America. So when I joined HydroStar, it was really with the intent of this kind of cool, locatable pumped hydro-like asset could see a lot of potential in, and you're beginning to see that take off today. So
awesome. That's well, we're here. Let's get a little bit more in depth on what specifically is HydroStar, because I am looking at some of the investors and partners in HydroStar. You're being backed by Goldman Sachs Asset Management, also the Canada Pension Plan Investment Board. So obviously, if you have these kind of partners and or investors, it's a pretty important thing you're doing. So let's get into depth, or tell me in depth, what is HydroStar?
Yeah, absolutely. So we are, in fact, as you could allude to, Goldman Sachs' global play on long duration energy storage. So they're looking at our pathway for compressed air storage as being one of the key pathways that's going to allow for, call it, 8 hour and longer discharge durations of storage. As I was sort of indicating, we used compressed air as our storage basis. So that's quite a well-known technique. It's been used for many decades. There's a couple of operational plants in Alabama and Germany that have been in place for decades. What we do is, and it's conceptually very simple. I mean, really, you're just taking off-peak electricity, you're running it through a compressor, you're storing that high-pressure air underground, and then you're running it through a turbine when the grid needs it. The challenge with the traditional approach to compressed air is, for one thing, you always need a heat source to go into the turbine. And so typically what they've done for that is burn natural gas. So it's a very effective system, but it's effectively 4,300 heat rate natural gas plant in addition to all the storage infrastructure. So there just hasn't been that many economic use cases for it. And also it's really limited by siting. It needs to be sited near a salt cavern where there's really, really large existing storage volume. The long and the short of HydroStar is really just that we've obviated the need for either of those limitations. So we don't use a fuel source. We capture heat from our compression. We store it. We put it back into the turbine when it's generating. And we also flexibly build out cavities out of hard rock, just using techniques they use in the hydrocarbon storage industry. They build out these caverns for propane and butane storage. We're just redeploying the same techniques for compressed air. And because we use a water compensation principle, which I won't dive into details of, but what it allows us to do is be really, really space efficient with our storage. So all that to say, if we're at the right scale, which typically for building up a greenfield plant is about 500 megawatts, 8 hours plus, we're really one of the lowest cost, most cost effective forms of long duration energy storage. And I guess I just close off on that point by saying part of the reason we are backed by Goldman Sachs and CPP is because this isn't a lab experiment. It's not, this is, we're deploying projects today. Mm-hmm. We're very active in California and Australia. We're nearing
financial. These are proven methods, which are basically
very proven methods, financeable. And in those jurisdictions where we're quite well known, like California and Australia, really seen as the third immediately available pathway for long duration storage. So pumped hydro, lithium ion batteries, and compressed air. And we've been quite successful to date at bringing some projects to nearing fruition.
Very good. Can we talk a little bit about some of your more notable projects?
Sure.
A little in depth, where are they? What are they doing?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're well past the pilot phase, which is why we're so proven. We have had pilot facilities in the past just to prove out our fuel-free process. We also have a commercial project that's contracted to the IESO in Ontario up in Canada, which has been operational since 2020. And again, that's just a fully commercial asset with contractual LDs and so on. In this period, we've been developing our really, really large-scale project. So we have a project called our Willow Rock Energy Storage Center in California, just 500 megawatts, 8 hours just north of LA. We just signed our interconnection agreement for that. We've just filed our permits with the California Energy Commission. And we've signed some of the largest energy storage offtake contracts in the world with a utility partner in California. And we're shortlisted for all the balance of the offtake as well. So that project's plowing along towards a financial close of roughly early to mid next year. It will be in service towards the end of the decade, which is exactly when California has these needs.
Okay.
And even sooner than that is our Australian project, which is in the town of Broken Hill. And so this is actually where BHP got its name, Broken Hill PTY. And we're at a mine there, a 200 megawatt, 8-hour project, and it's supplying the backup reliability solution to the town, as well as a whole bunch of long duration energy services to the grid. And we've just signed all the contracts for that project as well. So that'll actually be hitting financial close sooner, towards the end of this year and in service by around 2027.
John, we have to take a quick break. You're listening to In the Oil Patch Radio Show. We'll be right back.
The Texas Oil and Gas Association Safety Group is your pipeline to discounts, dividends, and industry expertise. It's a value-added benefit from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, the state's leading workers' comp provider. At Texas Mutual, they know the oil and gas industry, which means you'll have access to expert resources and information that make your business better. As a safety group member, you'll also save about 12% on your workers' comp premium, and that's just the beginning. While Texas Mutual policyholders can earn an annual dividend for keeping their workers safe, safety group members can get something even better, a second dividend. That's up to 2 dividends every year. Plus, you'll get service-focused coverage from Texas Mutual, a workers' comp partner you know and trust. The Texas Oil and Gas Association Safety Group is tailor-made for your business. Talk to your agent or learn more at texasmutual.com/TXOGA. Dividends are based on performance and not guaranteed.
And we're back. You're listening to an Oil Patch Radio Show.
Can we talk about God-rich energy storage?
Yeah.
So what is that? Because my data is reflecting, or my research is reflecting, it's zero greenhouse gas emissions up for electric grid.
Right.
So is this one of the ones you spoke about, or is this a different project? And how many are scheduled to come to North America?
Yeah, absolutely. So that is our Ontario project that's contracted to the ISO. It's a 2-megawatt plant that is fully fuel-free. It uses our full so-called adiabatic fuel-free process.
Okay.
And is located in a salt cavern there, just given its smaller size. But again, this is a contracted asset that is actually providing commercial services onto the Ontario electricity grid. So that's been important to underwrite. We can provide full performance guarantees. We can provide the backstop financing. And we have EPC partners in California and Australia who provide our fully wrapped facilities for delivery. What's interesting is the full-scale project, so 200 to 500 megawatts, the delivery channels are actually more straightforward. We're really just using off-the-shelf turbo machinery from MAN, Baker Hughes, some of the other major entities out there. They make them for the oil and gas industry, and we're just redeploying these for more clean energy transition purpose, which is kind of a neat story. So to your question on the pipeline, we actually have thousands of megawatts in our pipeline right now. We have the 2 near-term projects that I was just mentioning, 700 megawatts.
Mm-hmm.
And we have interconnection queue positions across North America, totaling roughly 4,000 or 5,000 megawatts of total delivery capability. Primarily, we're looking at the Southwest, New York, Ontario. We're increasingly entering Europe. We have a partnership with EDF there in the UK on a project, and significant expansion in Australia. And these are all, it's not a coincidence that these are all markets that are demonstrating really, really strong long-duration storage needs. So retiring fossil generation, some higher renewable penetrations, they really need something beyond short-duration batteries, and that's what we can provide them very effectively.
So last question. Time window of when you see, especially maybe here in North America, that this is a practice that is widely used or completely used of being able to store and hit our net zero, desires to hit net zero, should I say. How long is this before this is just a very common thing that everyone is very familiar with, not just in the oil and gas industry?
Yeah, for sure. In terms of our solution, advanced compressed air storage, there are places where it's becoming quite well known already. So I would say in California and Australia in particular, we have a lot of name recognition. We're included in their integrated system planning, and we're seen as an important pathway to how they're going to, you know, transition to net zero, but also even deal with fossil retirements that are happening very quickly. So that's where we've been pretty successful, just lining up contracts. Admittedly, there are other jurisdictions out there that aren't that familiar with hydro-solar, and that could be partly because they haven't really adopted their or clarified what their long duration needs might be. There's, you know, every market's in sort of different situations.
Right.
So ones that do really have long duration energy storage needs tend to be aware of HydroStore. And in fact, we spend a lot of time working in those markets. The other thing that we do is we're not just a technology supplier. So we do integrate this system together, but we're also an IPP developer. So we develop our own projects. We work very, very early on with governments and policymakers trying to achieve their targets, but also ensure that there's clear pathways for commercial offtake on long duration. And we spend more time, honestly, talking about long duration as opposed to compressed air specifically, because we find we're just a really effective solution for that. And that is really the key need that grid operators need to realize. There's a longer lead time required for, say, pumped hydro, compressed air, just major infrastructure projects. So they need to plan ahead for long duration storage and put mechanisms in place that allow it to be financed.
So CERAWeek is taking place here in Texas, Houston, Texas, probably the energy capital of North America, maybe even the world. But how is Texas ranking as far as utilizing some of your programs? What A to F would you give a ranking in Texas? Where do we need to be? Maybe I shouldn't go that far, but what are we doing?
I don't know if I'd give it a report card per se, and it would have to be accomplished. Some things are doing very well, some things not so good. We're all aware of the issues that ERCOT's faced recently or a couple of years ago and reliability issues. I mean,
oh yes,
in our view, that's more a diversity problem. I think ERCOT really has been probably the most efficient energy market in the world for power. But if you focus too much on efficiency and not on reliability, then that's sort of a logical outcome. So there's a need for capacity, and I think in many ways ERCOT is incenting capacity. The challenge for long duration storage providers, or at least ones that are major infrastructures like ours, is just the lead times and the plan ahead. And is there certainty on what the revenue sufficiency is going to look like long term? We are actually actively looking at Texas, but we're hopeful that there'll be some evolution over time on how to fill those capacity needs, how to deal with revenue gaps, how to ensure we bridge the gap between just the efficiency of the power market with what major infrastructure providers like ourselves would require to be financing projects. But Texas has really been a leader in terms of innovation on markets, approaches to connecting renewable generation. I mean, look how effective that's been.
Right, right. Very diverse.
Yeah.
I believe in all the above.
Absolutely.
But we do have baseload problems and capacity to ERCOT, durability, reliability.
And I think there's a physical need, just given the amount of renewables that are out there and the need for capacity. It's very natural to fit for long-duration storage. Take that excess renewables, store it, and provide that peaking capacity on the grid when it's required so that we're not just reliant on natural gas. So
exactly.
Yeah.
Well, John, thank you for stopping by in the Oil Patch and catching us up on what you guys are up to at HydroStore. Look forward to seeing you next year.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you.
In the Oil Patch is where, together, we explore topics that affect us all in oil, gas, business, and in your community. Every week, your host, Kim Bellotto, will visit with the movers and shakers in this fast-paced industry. You'll hear from industry experts, elected officials, and many more right here on In the Oil Patch.
Hey, when you're in business, you have to make a lot of tough choices. So let's talk about an easy one, your workers' comp coverage. If you're a propane or butane dealer or operator, you need to join the Lone Star Energy Safety Group through Texas Mutual Insurance Company. As a member, you'll automatically get a discount on your premium, plus you can earn double dividends that'll go straight into your pocket. It's the easiest decision you'll ever make. Find out more at texasmutual.com/Lone Star Energy.
Are you a business owner feeling overwhelmed where to begin your business's online presence? Maybe you've spent thousands of dollars in the past just to be highly disappointed with the results. We understand, because we were once you. Since then, we decided to hire the very best experts to help us and you.
Let us send you our business profile that will quickly show you your Google business rankings in these five areas:
reputation, ratings online, website, advertising and social media, and search engine optimization. All of these areas really affect how Google ranks your entire listing.
So if ranking on page one is your goal, pick up the phone and call us now, 210-240-7188, or simply go to shalemag.com/business profile. We'll be in contact with you within 24 hours. Once again, pick up the phone and call us now, 210-240-7188, or simply go to shalemag.com. That's shalemag.com/business profile. Start dealing with a company you can trust and always find.